Welcome to episode 3B of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to what's behind the world of comics for the average comic book fan. Join in as Toby Cook, David Price, and myself, Ian Levitstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. On today's episode, we finish up our crossover with the Raging Bullets podcast as Jim and Sean continue to give us some in-depth conversation on 52 and 1 year later, and random conversation as always. And David Price continues to be vacationing in Florida during the recording of this episode, but he's back now. Hi, David, what's up? Here now, the host of our show, joined in progress, Toby Cook.
One thing I did want to ask, though, have you guys checked out 52thecomic.com?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Okay, Jim, if you get a chance, I definitely recommend checking that out. It's a nice little, especially if you're going to be reading the issues as this goes on. It's a nice little, they're going to give like weekly updates and stuff like that. Neat little news bits and stuff that's just, in fact, there's one about a Bizarro racing horse.
I saw that. That was great. It was
Bizarro, yeah, or Bizarro. I'm like, what?
And the fact that they made it into the Daily Planet, and they have a little stock ticker on the side with a whole bunch of you know, DC companies inside of there, like LexCorp and all the other things in there. You know, they put so much work into it. You could tell that it just it's great. It really is.
Right, and you can download. There's polls. There's a poll on if corporate sponsorship appears is a good thing.
Huh.
I saw that. That was cool. That is really really cool.
Yeah, and there's a Remember Bloodhaven ribbon, which is green with little spots.
Oh, wow.
A little funny there.
That's actually...
That's
kind of messed up. Green with little spots, yes. Yes, remember the radioactive people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Somebody's got a really sick sense of humor, and I like
it. Oh, there's also a DEO TPS report.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Did you guys notice at the eulogy that there's a Nightwing there?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm going to have to.
Who is that?
Who do you think that is?
That's exactly what the point I'm trying to make, though. It's
I think that's who we think it is.
That is actually, you know what? Because he's in the exact same outfit he was just in. He hasn't changed outfits yet, because if you realize in 1 year later, the Nightwing outfit has changed a little bit, especially in the mask, and the outfit itself looks a bit different. This is the exact same thing he was just wearing. So,
right, because this only takes like we said before, this only takes place a few days after.
Martian Manhunter's in the old outfit, so.
Right, okay. And this is, we're on day six, so.
But I'm looking at that, and if Batman's gone already, and Robin's not there, am I correct?
Batman, Robin, and Nightwing all left together.
Actually, you know what? Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, if they did all leave together, that could very well be Jason Todd.
That's what I'm questioning.
Oh boy.
Because I don't know, because I'm looking at that and I'm like,
Yeah, no, because you know what? Because I remember, in the Teen Titans 1 year later, didn't Cassie say, where were you at the funeral?
Yes.
Oh yes, she did. She did.
In the photo. I don't know if it's the way that she's drawn. It almost looks like she's looking for somebody, but I don't know. I don't know if it's meant to be her covering her eyes because she's crying, or that she's looking for somebody and it's just the way it's drawn. To me, it looks like she's looking for somebody, but that could be wishful thinking.
I'm sure that she might very well be looking for Robin. Like, why is he not here? You know.
If so,
I just thought it was interesting to see both Gar and Empress from Young Justice. Yeah. Standing next to her. That was kind of
nice little nod.
Todd Knock will be drawing issues of 52, which is definitely going to make me a happy man.
Yeah, that would be nice to see him back on some of these characters.
Yeah, I loved his Wild Guard stuff for Image.
Well, that was very, very good. You're absolutely correct. I really, really enjoyed that as well.
I have all the issues.
Me too.
So does Ian. All right, so from that...
Let's go.
I guess they... Yeah, well, we got a little bit with Savannah, too. That one's kind of really simple, real quick. I mean, we don't know. I think we'll see more about that.
The mystery of his abduction?
Yeah, find out why Croc and Grodd, because that's obvious by the two arms, that it was Croc and Grodd taking him off to see the Society. But moving on, let's talk a little bit about 1 year later. I know we're probably running a little long, but I want to touch.
This is a special episode. It can run long.
Right, right. But,
doing long episodes together.
We were sitting there, and if I remember correctly, we then sat there for at least another 15 more minutes just talking about things completely off topic from what we were talking about before that. We were there for at least 3 hours.
You're talking about after we stopped recording?
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there was a showcase spotlight on GeekSpeak a little while back that Sean was a part of for American Animation, so there you go.
So, out of the 1 year lit, I know you guys, Sean, have reviewed a few of the 1 year later titles on your show. I know from listening to episode 5 that you guys had touched on Nightwing.
We've done almost all of them.
Okay.
The only ones that we haven't done we're in the process of recording Titans 1 year later.
Okay.
Which we can certainly talk about. I don't know if you guys want to head in that direction.
I definitely need to touch on Titans at least a little bit. So,
okay, and then
that's an interesting new status quo.
Yeah, we haven't done like the later releases like Ion. We haven't done those yet. We are going to do them. We're going to do Ion.
Almost my name.
I saw that post. That was great. And then Supergirl, because Supergirl was again a late release, but it's been basically the late releases, which I mean that's been the history of Supergirl. So every one of those has been a late release,
right. Okay, so why don't we start with the two biggest ones, Batman and Superman? The reason I want to bring up Superman first,
okay,
because I picked up Superman 652. Jim hasn't read this yet, has he?
Which one was 652?
Part 5 of Up, Up, and Away.
No, I have not read that yet.
Okay, Sean, you've read it?
No, I honestly have not.
Oh, man.
Okay, I am okay if we discuss it, so.
Okay, Jim, are you okay? Because I'm sure you guys will go back and read it anyways, because you're going to review
absolutely.
It.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man. I will tell you, this is the best Superman has been in a long time. I read this issue, and the last page, basically, how far did you guys get into reviewing? You did the first three, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so you did...
I read 4. I have not read part 5.
Okay, so you got up to the point where... Wait, let me go back one.
We got to the point where Luther is walking into that big room of all the kryptonite with Toyman.
Yeah,
basically the operation.
Yeah.
Okay, so where that picks up, I'll keep the spoilers off that one, just because I don't want to ruin it for you guys. Because this is stuff that if I spoil it, it really, really is something you need to read. But basically. What you guys talked about? You gonna read it right now?
No, I'm joking.
Hey, you can read it while we're talking.
There you go.
It'll be fresh for discussion. But read part 4 first, really, because it's I like the slow build.
Yeah.
I like how everything's sort of developing. Luther's become such a strong villain again.
Yeah.
I mean, he really has been fleshed out. His hatred for Superman and how much he wants to move past that, how he needs to regain his company and get back into the good graces of Metropolis no matter what the cost.
And it makes me wonder exactly what happened during 52, because they're alluding to more and more things happening to Lex Luthor that, you know, we haven't really discovered yet. And obviously, anybody who has heard about 52 knows that at one point Lex Luthor is going to introduce his own Justice League, which is going to have – I forget who the members are, but they revealed in the recent Wizards. So obviously I have a feeling that part of his falling out does have something to do with that. But
is that new Supernova going to be a part of that? Is that what I read?
That's a good question, actually. I'm not entirely sure.
They haven't fleshed that out yet. I'm sure when we get closer to that, they'll give us more information. I kind of like DC's kind of keeping things close to the hilt and not giving out a lot of information, unlike another major company that shall remain nameless. Oh, here we go. Luthor's team. Lex Luthor will form his own. It's going to happen in 52.
Which actually I'm really happy to see that it's happening during 52 and they're not doing it outside in its own book, because I feel that this fits 52 perfectly.
You didn't hear in the next solicitations for DC, they're going to be doing Luther's Justice League, the mini?
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
It's called the Battle of Metropolis. Oh, God. I'm sorry. It's just that there's been a lot of miniseries popping up from DC.
And they, you know, we got Crisis Aftermath, we got the Spectre, and Battle for Bloodhaven. Mm-hmm. I think those are the two major ones right there.
Right. Which, and I mean, I'm not saying that in a negative way. Actually, I'm looking forward to all of them. My wallet isn't, but
hold on a second. I need to grab something real quick. I'll be right back.
Okay. I mean, one thing that I'm enjoying about DC, and again, it is linked to the fact that we really don't know anything, even from the solicits, is the fact that the information that they're giving us is just enough. It's like it's leading the mouse to the cheese. And it doesn't want to read it any less, you know.
It's a great point, too, because they did it with Infinite Crisis. They did it leading up to Infinite Crisis. They've done it at their panels. I was at the Wizard World Chicago panel last year, and I had a very similar experience to the one that you just mentioned earlier, how they tease you with just these little tidbits of information that don't ruin the story, but kind of entice you more to want to know, okay, how does that happen, or you know, where does that go? And they've been doing that brilliantly. This is just a classic example of it with 52, because there's so many plot threads they've thrown out there that I'm interested in. Even as we were, you know, talking about the things that invite us about Booster Gold, I'm curious to see how that all came about. So they've got me hooked.
And Brave New World also. I mean, just looking at Brave New World just makes me salivate. Seriously. I mean,
it's only a buck. Exactly. You can't go
it's
wrong.
It's only a buck, and it's going to have, you know, basically, well, for those who don't know, it's going to have Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, OMAC, Martian Manhunter, the Trials of Shazam, the all-new Atom, and the Creeper all involved in it. And the silhouette on what appears to be Martian Manhunter, I'm still not convinced that that's Martian Manhunter in the solicits. I don't know.
That one's kind of got me.
I'm hinting towards it being somebody from a past crisis, if you know what I mean, because it does look a lot like a certain somebody, and I'm not going to give that part away to anybody who hasn't read Crisis on Infinite.
I know what you're talking about. Exactly. Though.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about too, and that's entirely possible. But what I was looking for was I was trying to find my Superman issues. For the 1 year later stuff, because I have all of them up to current. But
you
I want to
look at the operation table, don't you?
I'm sorry, that was so funny. That was so unfitting with Toy Man. That made so much sense.
Oh, man. What do you guys think about the return of the Kryptonite Man? I mean, that's obviously, you know, that's a Silver Age character that really hasn't seen too much outside of the Silver Age. And he was actually kind of cheesy back in the Silver Age. I mean, come on, a man made out of kryptonite? I mean, but now it sort of fits with the story a lot, especially with Lex Luthor trying to gather all the kryptonite together.
And a very contemporary origin. I liked the Kryptonite Man's origin this time around, that it was a scientist who was trying to use kryptonite for good purposes. I liked the fact that it was public enough that Clark Kent was aware of it and was, you know, hoping that the green stuff would actually see some good, healthy use for people. Obviously, that didn't work out. But I thought it was an interesting origin. Did you have any thoughts on that?
I liked it.
Yeah, it was a good character.
Yeah, I didn't really see him as didn't know he was a character from the past, and I didn't see him as, I kind of saw him just more as a something to tell the story further, how Soup's not around anymore, etc.
And Jim loves Silver Age, so.
Oh, I absolutely love this stuff.
Well, hey,
Silver Age stuff is
as long as they don't bring.
We're saying that very sarcastically. When we started talking to you guys, we were in the middle of recording episode 8, and we were doing a Titans showcase, and Jim made clear his feelings on the Silver Age. Jim and I don't share those feelings on Silver Age, but
and you can hear it at RagingBullets.com.
I wasn't going there, Jim.
Like I said, as long as they leave the composite Superman out of it, I'll be happy. That's it.
Hey, I like the composite Superman.
One part Batman, one part Superman. I mean, dear God.
No. One part Batman, one part Superman with the power of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yes. Yes.
Can't leave that part out. He was a janitor in the Superman Museum, and I guess lightning struck the Legion statues, and They all had little bits of their powers and transferred them into him. Yeah.
Yes, and when your powers combined, I am Captain Planet. I mean, geez, you know, no. I'm sorry.
I heard the new one's going to have parts of Wonder Woman. I'm not going to say which parts. But
the corset, yeah.
Actually, you know what? You mentioned Wonder Woman. I just want to say that I'm actually looking forward to seeing what's going on with her.
I am. I'm looking forward to the new series. Yeah. New writer. And
only thing I know about her. It's going to be great. Only thing I know about her really is from like the old Linda Carter TV show. So I don't really know anything about the Wonder Woman that's been in the comic book. So, but just everything they've done so far with Batman, Superman, with the 1 year laters, with the crisis, with everything, it's got me actually curious what the heck they're going to do with her. So
I have a lot of confidence in the team they've put together for
Alan Heinberg, who's done. Yeah. He's a writer for the OC, and he's done Young Avengers.
Yeah, both of which I like. So
yeah, but he's obviously a comic book geek because there's actually a Wonder Woman reference in the OC. I think Sean, you mentioned that you had watched that, right?
Yeah, my wife and I watched that on.
So you know about the Wonder Woman reference then?
I know it fondly.
all right, you know what? Enlighten us, people who don't watch the OC.
Okay.
Enlighten us.
There was a part where Seth, who's the comic geek in the OC, he's basically us in the OC. That's what appeals to me, is that you can see elements of yourself in Seth. Well, his girlfriend, to surprise him, dresses up as Wonder Woman.
Oh boy!
Nice.
I knew that would get Jim's attention.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, maybe I'll watch the OC now.
in reference to a previous conversation before we started recording this episode that we won't get into.
I
couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
No.
Jim's love for anime women.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I can.
Oh boy.
20 years. Pal. 20 years of friendship out the window.
Yeah. So, okay. The new Wonder Woman series looks like that's going to be good. Alan Heinberg and the Dodsons doing the art. I'm sold. I'll at least pick up the first issue, if nothing else.
And they said that they might. Do they have any word if it's going to be monthly or bi-monthly? I know that they were talking about to keep it on schedule. They might do bi-monthly.
I'd be okay with bi-monthly.
I would too.
As long as it can stay on a schedule, I'd be okay with that.
I am upset though that this is going to cut into his Young Avengers though, because the fact that they're putting Young Avengers on a hiatus does upset me. But I am happy to see him on Wonder Woman. I'm sure he'll do a good job. I just really like Young Avengers.
You know what? I'm reading that too, and I actually really do enjoy that as well. It's a very, very, very good series.
Yeah, well, sadly, I learned today that we do have one book that's not going to survive.
Oh, really?
And that's Manhunter.
Oh, yeah. I read that.
Cancel with issue 25.
I just picked it up, too. I had just picked up issue 21 and really, really enjoyed
it. That's a tragedy.
And I guess I'm going to have to get the trade paperbacks of the old stuff, because pretty soon I'm not going to have any.
I think there's only been one trade, hasn't there? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, there's only one trade. There's a second one solicited. I don't think we'll see a third, which it's sales. But Mark Andrego and the artist, who I can't remember, they did a great job on it. I mean, they actually tied Kate Spencer into previous Manhunter history to the JSA, because it was revealed that she's related somehow to Al Pratt. Yeah. So they haven't fleshed that out yet, but I guess Dr. Midnight.
Great-granddaughter or something?
Something like that. Something like that. But I'm sure, we got a couple more issues to wrap it up. But I'm sure that she'll play a role in the maybe there's a reason why they're doing that. Maybe she'll play a role in DCU beyond this.
I certainly hope so.
I hope.
I don't know. You know, the only thought that pops in my mind, I was just realizing we were talking about Batwoman earlier.
Ooh. Huh.
It's possible.
Possible, yeah.
Although we did see Manhunter there, but that could be a red herring.
Certainly, it could be. But also, I'm thinking that if she does turn out, not to be Batwoman, I'd like to see her in the pages of Justice Society. I really would. I mean, I mean,
I'd be okay with that.
Past, you know, exploring, you know, Al Pratt's past and try to, you know, figure out exactly who she is, you know, that'd be great.
It's funny, as you said that it was being canceled, I guess where my biggest concern was, where's the writer going now? Because I think one of the keys to that series for me has been just great writing. It's been a very, very well-written series, and I'm hoping that if they cancel that, I mean, obviously not if, when they cancel that series, I'm hoping that they put the writer on something else fast, because
I agree. Marco Draco is a great writer. I love the way he's written Kate Spencer, because I actually looked. It's one of those books that got me into the shop every week.
I would like to see
it. Really was
of Stars and Stripe, actually written by him.
I'd be okay with that, but I'm happier with Stargirl just being in the JSA.
Yeah, well.
I think that's where she's really kind of coming to her own. I mean, there was an issue 81. Right before the Paul Levitz arc was really strong character development for Courtney with the Shade coming in at the end of the issue and, you know, telling her about her father.
Yeah, that was really, really deep, definitely.
Yeah, and there's a Starman tie there too, you know, with Jack having given her the cosmic rod. In the early part
rumors
of
Jack's appearing at some point in time in 52.
I've heard that too.
We'll see.
So hopefully we will indeed see him.
Dan DiDio. I think Dan DiDio said it. I was in one of the question or answer sessions on Newsarama.
I believe
maybe?
So.
Right. I'm sure we'll see more. There's still other characters they've said they're going to explore. So I'm sure we'll see more about the stuff.
Yeah.
As we go along.
Yeah, Jack Knight 2 appear in 52. It's on the DC boards, so it looks like he's going to appear.
Yay! Yeah. That'll be good.
That's a character I definitely miss.
Yeah, me too.
I'd like to discuss, since you guys said that you both read the Teen Titans 1 year later, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Well, before we do that, though, Ian, I wanted to, because we got on Superman and we were going to briefly discuss Batman.
Yeah.
Right, so let's do this. Let's discuss Superman and Supergirl. We're pretty much done with Superman. We know that this is probably the best Superman's been. It is, honestly. I mean, I haven't actually looked forward to picking up a Superman comic in a long time.
Back to what makes Superman good. It's not just about Superman. It's about the people in his universe that he interacts with.
Right. Well, Sean, we know you love a good supporting cast, so.
I know, I go on and on about that. I didn't say it, though.
Yeah.
Yes, but we know.
Hey, at least we haven't gotten any whatnots from Jim today.
He threw in one.
There's been a couple.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't heard him. I must have missed him.
It's usually when I start going on a ramble that the whatnots get thrown in there, and I haven't been rambling a lot lately.
Yeah.
I don't think
Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, with Superman, it's getting back to the core of the character, really. It's not just about the costume, it's about the man behind the costume. I mean, we're getting to see what makes Superman Superman by looking at his more human side.
By looking
at Clark Kent.
Which is so fitting after the confrontation in Infinite Crisis, because he makes mention of that. When he grabs a hold of the S on Superboy Prime's chest, he makes mention of the fact that it's not where you were born. It's not the costume. It's not your powers. It's the man underneath it. And it's really cool that moment in Infinite Crisis is 1 year later followed up by this. It makes that moment all the more powerful to see the man that he's describing again instead of the Superman who maybe wasn't quite up to that level. So it's really nice that 1 year later we're getting this, and if they can keep this team on the book forever, I'll be happy.
Well, we know that Busiek is at least continuing. I think there was mention that it was going to be Busiek and Nicieza are going to write an arc.
I believe so, yeah.
Because I guess who was picking up? I'm trying to remember who was picking up after they finished their run.
I don't know. I know Busiek's definitely attached to one of the books afterwards.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
No, he definitely is. Yeah. In fact, I'm looking.
Right.
I believe I might have found here, but let's see.
I seem to remember seeing something in the July solicit. Gods.
Okay.
So take a look. It's either June or July.
Yeah, DC in July. I have it right here. It's on IGN's site, but you can probably find it somewhere else. Yeah, written by Kurt Busiek and Fabian Nicieza. Yeah, here we go. Superman number 654, art and cover by Carlos Pacheco and Jesus Marino. And Action Comics number 841, written by Kurt Busiek and Fabian Nicieza, art by Pete Woods, cover by Dave Gibbons. So it looks like they're doing an arc, but I think Busiek might just be writing Superman, and then Action is just an arc with Busiek and Nicieza.
And then they'll follow that up later with a regular writer?
Yeah.
Okay. Which should be great either way.
Busiek and Pacheco. I mean, that's... I have been waiting to see them collaborate again for a long time now, so...
The Pacheco cover, I'm actually looking in the previews right now, because you mentioned that it was the July solicits, so while you were looking up there, I opened that up, and the cover that they show for Superman 654 looks stunning as well Pacheco.
Yeah, so it's the cover for 841 looks like the Daily Planet. I love that.
And also, it's interesting to see that Rucka is not going to be sticking on Supergirl, that it's already going to be written by Joe Kelly. At the Supergirl
right. I think he's going to stick with Checkmate. But yeah, I love that cover to Action. I'm glad to see Pete Woods is staying on too, because he's perfect.
Oh, Pete Woods is outstanding on the current arc.
He just, after reading his stuff on Catwoman, he's raised his game.
Absolutely,
he really has.
And the amount of, and the one thing I love too is the background detail that he puts in each panel. It's just, you feel like you're a Metropolis, which I think a great artist knows how to bring Metropolis to life, because it should look like this just amazing, breathtaking city.
He's the first guy since McGinnis, and, the first guy, really.
Yeah, and that to me has just been, I think that's been part of the atmosphere that's been set in the book, too, I think that we're all feeling, is just that it looks so gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
It's just great.
He gets Superman. He knows how to make him look like a hero. He really does. I mean, when I see a panel with Superman in it, drawn by Pete Woods, that to me is Superman. I mean, that's what Superman should look like.
And part of the 1 year later books for me, they're helping me, not helping me, and they're making me more interested in 52, because I want to know how they got there. And I think that's a key. If you're going to spend 52 weeks reading a miniseries, you want to know something from it. And these books, a number of them, have mysteries in them that I know are going to be resolved in 52, that they're written so well that I want to know how they got to this point.
Right. Plus, how cool is it to see Clark Kent with a Green Lantern ring?
That was awesome.
That was great. And not only a Green Lantern ring, a Green Lantern ring with an S shield on it.
I mean, to think, like, how... He might very well be is he the first Green Lantern to have a customized, first person to wear a customized Green Lantern ring?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that before.
I just thought that was so
definitely
cool.
Without a doubt.
So, all right, so going from Superman, let's touch on Batman. And James Robinson writing Batman and Detective Comics.
Can we?
I know Jim loved this. Huh?
Let's keep him forever. Can we just do that
and
just keep James Robinson?
Thinking about this Batman, because it's...
I had a bucket around my neck.
It's just so great.
The best Batman I have ever read in my life. I will straight up say that.
And it's not a blasphemous comment.
No.
And that's actually not an insult to anything that's come before it. It's just that good.
Yeah. It really does. It really is revitalizing what Batman, you know, has always been about. You know, he's more of a detective. He's more about investigating what's going on. You know, the whole bit with Harvey Dent and with the villains that are showing up murdered and everything.
And it's still dark.
Yeah, and it's still dark.
I know there was a big concern that it wasn't going to be dark enough, or that was going to get lost. And I challenge that, because I do believe that this is still a dark series, but Batman's more accessible.
He's not the brooding hero he was a year ago.
Right.
He kind of seems more like a team player now.
But right. But he's also, did you notice how he was with the young cop? You know, she was up there on the roof, and he totally intimidated her.
Yeah.
And just totally didn't acknowledge her. But
Which Robin's very, like, don't worry, he does that to everybody.
But see, I like that because he hasn't lost some of that mystique that he's had before. But at the same token, you can see that same guy hanging out in Commissioner Gordon's office, and it shows the respect that he has for a character like Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
It's very cool stuff.
Right, and I love the conversation with Harvey, with Bullock.
Absolutely.
The thing about what he said about he believes everybody deserves at least one second chance.
Right.
I thought that was a great character moment for Batman, and it shows just how much he's changed
in
that year.
Especially when he's discussing whether or not he wants to try and adopt Tim after Tim has lost his best friend and his father in a matter of months. And, you know, obviously,
right.
I mean, that is just, you know, completely crushed him. And now he's had this year with Tim, with Dick, you know, basically finding himself while they find themselves. And he realizes, you know, he's a part of my life now. I would really love to actually, you know, make that official. And, you know, that's Batman right there also. Because you can tell, you know, he wants to be the father figure for this kid to make sure that, you know, he doesn't go down the wrong path like anybody who in the past has. And similarly, he's trained him to be what he is, you know?
That was perfect.
Let's go from that, and let's talk about the changes to Robin.
I am loving the changes to Robin, honestly. I am loving the new outfit. The new outfit, it's very similar to what he wore in the WB Batman animated series. You know, past the Fox one, because the Fox one was basically straight what he wore in the comics, but. This is much more similar to that. I love how the cape flows as well.
It was actually, if you remember, in the Fox series, it was Dick Grayson wearing that costume, whereas Tim Drake is now wearing the Tim Drake costume from the animated series.
Yeah.
Which is, I'll be honest, I hated the costume at first. I'm talking about the first time I saw it. After reading the first issue of Batman and then reading the first Robin, I instantly fell in love with it. I love seeing it on panel and seeing it actually being utilized. I like the fact that it's a little bit darker because it helps him hide in the shadows, and it's actually more fitting of Batman's sidekick,
I
think.
You can't hide in the shadows green on your costume, you know?
Yeah.
It works.
And I think it's a simplified, streamlined design that shows that, you know, maybe in that year that he's been gone that, you know, he's kind of had, you know, kind of a growing up. And so this is a reflection of, you know, his desire to be a stronger counterpart to Batman.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, another thing also that you notice in Robin, I also got to mention, in that first issue of Batman, I had such a geekgasm when I saw Batman and Robin just flying onto the roof. You know, on their lines for the first time, it was like, oh my god, this is Batman and Robin. You know, this is Batman and Robin right there.
The end of part one. You're talking about the end of part one.
That was
cool.
And obviously with the bat signal also. But Robin, I mean, he's grown so much over the years, and you can see that. And even though he's had all these, you know, tribulations, he still triumphs. You know, he's still. He can still be a little bit of a kid, and yet still has such of an adult quality to him, which I love, and it's so much more apparent now 1 year later.
Right. Well, Jim, what did you think about you guys just recently reviewed the first issue of Robin 1 year later, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was I love it. I actually really enjoyed, you know, read all of the Batman universe ones. I really enjoyed. You know, the Batman I was in on Robin came in. I thought that was wonderful. It's showing, you know, a team concept, but with the strong individuals within the team.
And, right.
You know, especially then seeing with Nightwing, when I read Nightwing, the same thing. I saw it, you know, this is like a rebirth of Nightwing coming, you know, the return of Nightwing. I guess there's some people who are seeing negative sides with it.
I don't like it, personally.
I like it.
How do you? Actually, I'm glad you said that, Toby. How do you see Nightwing? Because I've been able to see both sides of it, and I can see how people are unhappy with it and how people are happy with it. When I reviewed it, I said one of the things I was on the fence about was the fact that I don't want this to continue being the whiny Nightwing. I'm okay if it starts out initially that way because of the fact that he's been there for so long.
Right, and I remember hearing that in your review.
But I actually, it was Jim actually kind of convinced me more and more that it could be him coming out of the darkness and into the light, which I was actually more encouraged by. How did you see it?
Well, I saw it as there's no real need for a second Nightwing.
Oh, for the Jason Todd one?
I don't like that. They should have just left that with the Red Hood story, the Under the Hood storyline. They should have just cut that and just left it alone. There's absolutely no reason to have Jason Todd in this book.
I really would, because while Dick Grayson and Tim and Bruce have had this year to grow, Jason was not in on that year. He was not with them that entire time, and in doing so, he himself, I feel, decided, well, hell, you know, I've been Robin, and they're off growing, and guess what? When Dick Grayson became Nightwing, he grew a lot. So, hey, why don't I become Nightwing? Why don't I do it my way and see, you know, how it works for me? And, you know, not knowing that Dick would be back nearly as soon as he was, because, well, he was gone for an entire year. Nobody knew that they would even be back in the first place.
Right. But the problem is where you had Dick Grayson, you know, evolving into Nightwing, there was no change for Jason Todd. There was no what I'm saying is there was no change in his motivation.
Okay.
He was still being the bloodthirsty vigilante he was. He was just doing it with a different look.
See,
when we last left Jason Todd, was it when Bloodhaven blew up?
Yeah.
Was that the last we saw of him?
Yeah.
Is he going to appear in 52? Do you think?
He'll have to. Yeah. I mean, we need to know what happened in that already. Year for him.
He may have already.
Yeah, he may have already. If that's what we think,
yeah,
because
it could very well be Jason Todd right there for all we know.
I hope that they're going to move away from the like what you were saying, Shauna, the whiny Nightwing. And I think there was an issue of Nightwing that just came out this week, so maybe we'll start to see that change. But overall, I've never been a fan of Bruce Jones's writing. I didn't like his stuff on the Hulk just because it didn't mesh with what I saw in the character. But, okay, I'll give this benefit of the doubt, I guess.
I think he's doing a very good job.
And see if...
I mean, I feel that... Well, except for the womanizing part. That really didn't feel right for me.
You know where that felt right for me? Did you see what the woman looked like?
No, that's true.
He likes redheads.
Yeah.
What can you say? He's always had a thing for redheads.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that was more to get you interested in what happened with the proposal that you mentioned earlier. We don't know what happened with that yet. And I think that was, I mean, at least for me, how I read that was a story element to keep you reminded.
He still hasn't forgotten about, you know, what she meant to him, which is, I think that's where that identification comes from.
I think so, too.
But, okay, so let's touch on Teen Titans and Outsiders to some extent, because the series, for a while, have been pretty closely tied together. Let's start with Teen Titans, Ian, since you said
you wanted to talk about
that.
Ooh, what do I have to say about Teen Titans? Well, for one thing, it's a completely different book, and I mean a completely different book than it was before 1 year later. I mean, there are two members of the cast that are actual three members of the cast that are actual Teen Titans now that were Teen Titans before the change. And I feel that that's because of all the growth that's happened during that year. I mean, the fact that they did lose Connor, yeah, obviously, and the fact that completely split the team apart. And during this 1 year, also, I love the fact that Cyborg lost a year, too. Because Cyborg was down that entire year from whatever happened in space. He first woke up 1 year later, just like we just woke up 1 year later and are looking at these Teen Titans now, which is a great touch. And also, the big reveal at the end of that first issue with Tim going down into the basement and him trying to clone a new Superboy to try and get his best friend back, that just felt so real to me. Even though he was using this, you know, this technology, which is obviously, you know, not even close to anything that we could possibly ever have, but that just felt so real for me because he just wants his best friend back.
Do we think he's going to be successful?
I think he will be successful, but I don't think it's going to be the Connor that we know. I don't think he's ever going to be able to get that Connor back. It'll be a Connor, but it will not be Superboy. It will be an entirely new character that's going to have to learn to grow and be, you know, his own character. Because the Connor we know is dead.
Where did the body go? Connor's body. I'm wondering how far Tim's gone with this.
Is he, you know, harvesting Connor's body?
If I remember right, during the build-up, Tim's already got pretty intimate knowledge of Connor's DNA.
Right.
Because Connor was the only one that knew, Tim was the only one who knew Connor's secret, that he was part Superman and part Lex Luthor.
I'm talking about, though, I guess what I meant was, I knew that part. I mean, the actual body of Connor, passed away, because of the fact that we're saying that this isn't going to be the same Connor.
What if he's working on the dead body, trying to bring it back from the dead?
If I'm remembering this correctly, wasn't there only like a small little like scrape of Connor's shirt that he was working with the DNA from?
Absolutely. Mm. I'm just wondering though, how far Tim's going to go with this to bring back his Connor, because he's got like the mad scientist vibe going on, which I really liked.
Yeah, and if he is successful, you know that is just going to cause a huge rip in the team itself.
Especially Cassie, because, I mean, she'll have this constant reminder, if it's not the Connor that we knew, she'll have this constant reminder of a guy who looks just like her dead boyfriend. Yeah.
Right.
So we've got, with Titans, I mean, we've got some major changes. We know that Gar's run off to restart the Doom Patrol with Bumblebee, of all characters. And as a result, you know, when Vic wakes up in that first issue, he's confronted by Wendy and Mark.
Connor twins.
I thought that was a nice nod.
You know,
seriously,
and it made sense. They're the caretakers of Titan's Tower. They're some interesting membership changes.
Yeah,
Zatara.
I like the fact that they were so blatantly like computer geeks, and that they were brought in for the purpose of helping to resurrect Cyborg, and that they'll stick around for a while, because I think that there's room for those characters in the DC universe. It's a nice nod to just the history of these heroes.
And I think also having the characters that they do in this, obviously, I mean we all know that Wade Wilson's daughter is a loose cannon. You know, I mean, she always has been, always will be. And that's a nice element there as well, because you don't know how much you can actually trust her.
You know what,
right? But she explained you know why she was a Titan.
Obviously,
she was pretty obvious about that.
Ravager is still out of her freaking mind. I mean, if once you read the second 1 year later issue, you'll see just how she's almost like got split personality disorder at some instances, where like 1 minute she's just regular old Ravager, the next minute she's like sex crazed, and the next minute she's back to being normal. It's like, what the hell's going on here?
She's a young Wolverine. What I mean by that, just to clarify it, when Wolverine first entered the X-Men, way back in the classic issues, one of the things about that character was that he was a loose cannon, and he was the one that caused a lot of that friction within the group. And sometimes he would deliberately, like she was doing, act as an antagonist. And it made for some interesting group dynamic moments. And it was one of the reasons why the character won over fans, because of the fact that he became that character that added so many twists to the story and so many interesting moments with the characters. You actually got to know the other characters from Wolverine. And I think she's going to be that character that's going to continue making this, I should say, because I've loved the series up to this point as well, but continue making this an interesting series.
What about Kid Devil? I mean, his change. I mean, when we saw him back in, I think it was issue 30 or 31, I mean, he was still wearing his old red Kid Devil outfit from his Blue Devil days. And now he's more of a demonic persona, kind of like what Blue Devil is now, you know, after his transformation during Underworld Unleashed. I think that's something that needs to be explored further, definitely.
Is he in a suit, or is this actually what he's like?
Okay, that's right, what he's like now.
That was actually one of my main problems. I wasn't sure whether he was inside of a suit or whether he was actually like that. That for some reason, that escaped me.
I think Blue Devil actually transformed him into the...
Well, I do like also that how Blue Devil was literally like keeping tabs on him, you know, like on a very, very short leash. Like, I'm not sure whether this is just being like the overprotective father figure or whether that's actually warranted or not. We don't know.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is you know, the mention of the departure of Raven, you know, after magic kind of went wonky, kind of made Blue Devil realize that the Titans needed, you know, that mystical side still. You know, in their lineup, maybe that'll be part of that. So,
did you see they're having a Raven miniseries?
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Written by Marv Wolfman.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I will definitely buy that. So,
I like the fact that they also didn't ignore in that issue the previous members, though. They made mention of Bart. They made mention of Speedy. They didn't just like ignore. They answered the questions that I liked it because we saw it through Cyborg's eyes, and they answered all the questions that Cyborg would have throughout, either through flashbacks or through explanation to him as the story progressed, which was really, really cool because Cyborg was where we were all at because we had missed at that point in time because 52 hadn't been released. We'd all missed the year too. So it was really a cool way of handling, I thought, that 1 year later. That was, I think, done a little bit differently than some of the other books had done it.
Yeah, there was also, I don't know if you guys noticed, but in the first issue, the Titans 1 year later, mm-hmm. Offspring, who's supposed to be the son of Plastic Man,
actually
made an appearance.
I did see that.
Which actually brought up a question, like, well, does that mean that the Kingdom guys are sort of around now, or whether he's just in our continuity, or what? Because how many years ago must Plastic Man have had a kid in order to have offspring? That's a good question.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes on there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Without a doubt.
I'm definitely interested to see where things go from here, but. I guess moving on to Outsiders. Wow, what a change in the status quo.
Yeah. Well, they're actual Outsiders now. They're completely outside the realm of any other superhero. Everybody thinks they're dead, you know?
I don't... Like I said before when we started talking about this stuff...
Just real quick, Jim's got to go because he's got an interview tomorrow. So I didn't want him to, like, drop off without you guys knowing it. But I'm going to stay with you. So, I mean, it's...
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, thanks for coming out, Jim.
Cool, right. Nice to be here.
And keep on doing what you're doing, man.
keep up on that. We'll definitely be listening to you guys and keeping up on stuff. So
you were talking about Outsiders.
Okay, so we got Nightwing. We got Thunder, who is daughter of Black Canary.
Black Canary.
We got Grace. Or Black Lightning. Black Lightning, I'm sorry. We got Grace. We got Metamorpho, who we're not sure on what's up with him yet, and Captain Boomerang. I don't know about that one.
Captain Boomerang?
It's just a weird. Yeah, it's just. I definitely want an explanation to that one.
It's actually that was one where, I guess I kind of liked, the fact that there is an explanation there, and I want to see what it is. I wonder if it has something to do with who his real mother is, or but then again, from what you said as far as who his real mother is, that wouldn't be a fitting explanation. So I don't know.
I'm really thinking that something must have happened between him and the Flash Rogues Gallery during that lost year that would lead towards his turning over to good. Because in one way, the Outsiders really aren't Well, I guess you could say they're a rogue group. They're not even, technically heroes at this point, So for him to join up with them, maybe there's just something that they offered him that the other guys were not offering that maybe he just decided to switch over.
And I'm only two issues in. Have they revealed? I mean, I don't know if we want to even go into it, but have they revealed why everyone thought they were dead?
Nope. Okay. I that hasn't been established yet. I don't think we're gonna. Winnick mentioned that we'll probably see that at the end of the arc. Yeah. So
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah, I definitely am intrigued by that. But it's definitely a different series than it was pre 1 year later. So it's going
to
be interesting to see.
It had to be, because you're trying to say at this point that it's a different Dick Grayson. I'm talking about as far as he's been through a lot in the last year. And the Dick Grayson that was in The Outsiders before didn't want anything to do with them, or wanted very little to do with them as caring about them as people. They were almost expendable to him
right
at that point in time.
Well, realize that pre-1 year later, you know, Jade was the leader of the group along with Arsenal. And with Arsenal not out of the basically out of the picture, Jade, you know, now deceased as a result of this Infinite Crisis. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what sort of things these guys are going to get themselves into.
Really, honestly. I mean, the fact that he's not in the lineup, I'm really worried about whether something happens to him during 52 or something like that, because he hasn't been in any of the books yet.
If you take a look at The Outsiders, like right before 1 year later, he has a conversation with Grace where she basically gets him to realize that maybe that The Outsiders isn't the place for him, so to speak. So, do you know what I'm talking about, Toby?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if, I don't know, and I guess I'm just saying that it may not be, it could be very well that something happened to him in 52, but it also could be, I guess I'm trying to say this more to make you feel better that there's another option out there.
The other
possibility could, I read that more as the possibility too was that just from talking to Grace, because it really seemed like he was thinking, okay, this really isn't the place for me. Because she basically alludes to the fact that maybe he didn't have, I don't know if it's the stomach enough, or it was something along those lines that, you know, this just was not the right fit for him. What that team needed to do was not the place for him to be. And I'm thinking that might be the reason why we're not seeing him as a part of this. I'm hoping, because I don't really necessarily want to see him come to any harm. I think we've seen a lot of that in the... At this stage, I kind of want to get away from it. I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, there's been such a talk about brutal deaths in comics. I think part of the reason why there needs to be such brutal deaths is because they happen so often and the people come back all the time that we don't believe them unless they're brutal deaths.
Yeah, like Psycho Pirate's not coming back anytime soon.
No, I'm pretty sure he's done for. But even that's not for sure.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I mean, there's just so much 1 year later that I'm sure 52 is gonna explain.
What are your thoughts on The Outsiders' direction? What did you guys?
I like it. I've really been a fan of the series from issue one, so I'm curious to see what this new team is capable of past this story arc. Because this story arc's not. I'm gonna stick with the book because I've been reading it for so long. So I want to see where they go from here.
Do you think?
I'm enjoying the direction as well, because this is pretty much what The Outsiders were formed to do in the first place. Well, at least this iteration, and just for a while there, they were just acting as, you know, a superhero group, but they really wanted to do the stuff that other heroes couldn't, and that's what they're doing now. You know, as this, you know, mercenary group or whatever you want to call them, they're outside the bounds of all the other superheroes in the DCU.
Do you feel Nightwing's book is taking place concurrently with this?
No.
Yeah, 'cause I didn't get that impression either. I don't think in Nightwing's book it's Nightwing's at the point that he's part of this yet.
We don't know how far ahead the timing on that 1 year later arc is. So
way around though, because if you think about it, Nightwing basically Dick had just gotten to New York in the first issue of Nightwing. For 1 year later. So
right.
All this stuff happening in the Middle East could very well be happening before his Nightwing book. You know, maybe after getting back, he decides to switch locations over to New York City.
Interesting, yeah. I'm really curious to see, because that a lot of these reveals I'm finding, a lot of the 52 reveals or 1 year later reveals, wherever they're going to reveal these things, a lot of these things I'm going to need in order to, like, I'm enjoying them now. I'm enjoying the fact that they're mysteries, but how those mysteries are resolved is going to really decide for me which books are really good books right now and which ones aren't. Because I really need the answer to a lot of these.
Yeah, well, I will tell you one thing. You read the second issue of Outsiders, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you know the mystery speedster that shows up at the end?
Uh-huh.
His identity is revealed in the next issue. And it's not anything that I saw coming. I'll tell you that right now.
And wow.
It's definitely, I don't want to spoil it because I want to know how they're going to play it out. I want you to read it.
Yeah, I'm anxious now.
But let's just say that what you see is not exactly what it appears to be.
I have so got to get caught up. We're working on our 10th episode. And I'm not doing this as a plug. I'm just saying I am like got stacks because of it beside my bed of 1 year later books that I want to read, which is my next. I'm going to start this week. Finally, I can start hacking through them because there's so many things I want to get caught up on because these storylines are really interesting.
The Firestorm
right now.
Issue on
yeah, there's enough newness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Ian. I talked over you.
No, I was just going to say. I mean, there have been so many 1 year laters coming out. They've been coming out so quickly. I missed the Firestorm issue and didn't even realize it. I picked up this month's, and I realized, wait a second, how the hell did he get here? So now I need to go back. And
yeah, there's another character with a new status quo, too.
Which is a really
interesting too. Yeah, being merged with Lorraine Riley, and they can't get more than a mile apart without something going boom. I'm like, whoa, okay. Stuart Moore's doing a good job on that book. But let's do this. Let's just do a quick wrap up. I'm gonna give you guys a quick hit or miss on upcoming books.
Hit or miss, boy.
Green Lantern, hit or miss.
Hit.
Okay. Supergirl and Legion, hit or miss.
Yeah, hit definitely hit so far. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know you guys reviewed that. Aquaman, hit or miss.
But they're going to have to reveal a lot soon because I'm actually starting to get really confused and I'm going to need something to stop that from being a miss.
Hit for me because of a blue hand alone. They've got me intrigued enough on where this is going. But I will definitely agree with Ian on the fact that I need more information.
Okay, Green Arrow, hit or miss?
Ooh. I will say hit right now as long as they keep Ollie.
Yeah. I'm gonna say hit as well for the same reasons. As far as Green Lantern, I'll say hit, but we're only one issue in, so I want to see where they go with it.
Beautiful.
Supergirl and Legion, huh?
Beautiful looking book, Green Lantern.
Oh yes. Carlos Pacheco art, I think.
Yeah, very nice.
So Supergirl and the Legion, hit or miss? For me, it's a hit, just because I want to see how this storyline plays out. I'm curious. It's a you're just a dream. Yeah, okay, sure. I'll play along. I want to know where this is going. So it's too bad Jim's not here because we definitely
not a real story, no, not at all. Oh man.
Yeah. Okay, so Secret Six.
I'm gonna say hit because Villains United was just so good.
Yeah, I'm gonna say hit because I would definitely say it's on its own. I don't know that it would be, but because Villains United got me so interested in the characters, it's definitely a hit for me because I just wanted to know more about them from Villains United.
And we don't know who the roster is going to be either.
Yeah.
That'll get me curious enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. Trying to think what if Brave New World. I'm going to go with hit just because it's gonna build to all these new series. So.
Is that going to be oversized again, like Countdown was?
Yeah.
Definite hit for that. Just definite hit for that. $1 for an 80-page book.
If
I'm
in.
Doing that again, I'm in
for that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And last one, the all new Atom.
Ooh. You know what, John Byrne art miss.
You know, I'd say that, except he's been hit or miss for me lately. It's Gail Simone writing. Well,
I know that's the tough part for me.
My problem.
Ooh, I did like them together. I will say.
I think that'll be a wait and see.
Gail Simone seemed to change her writing style for John Byrne for me. like, this was not the typical John, like Gail Simone's story when she was writing Superman. And it's like, it's almost as if, like being with John Byrne sort of warped her style a bit. I need to see a Gail Simone story here. And that's why. If she's if she writes a Gail Simone story, I'll be in it. But if she tries to, like, make her sort of story into a John Byrne story, I'm going to have to miss it.
And see, I don't want to say miss yet, though, because of the fact that it's Gail Simone. So right. I'm like, I guess I would say in the do we have it in the middle? I would say
we'll say wait and see on that one for me.
Yeah, I'm just
the preview art doesn't give me hope, but the inker that they've got on there is the inker for the Authority. So I'll give it a chance, and it looks kind of like older Byrne stuff.
Yeah,
so
which actually that would I would be fine with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the writing for me is going to sell me on that book. And
yeah, I think it's at least a first issue pickup, just curiosity's sake. I do that with anything Byrne writes, just to see what he brings to the book. Usually, I wind up leaving disappointed.
I don't have that luxury anymore. I've got to review it. So I've got to pick it up.
That was painful. That was torture. Ugh.
Yeah. But, okay, actually, I did remember one more book.
One more thing.
Okay.
Brad Meltzer and Ed Benes, Justice League of America.
Hit.
Is there something above a hit?
This is so far a hit out of – this is so far a home run after Identity Crisis and
perfect.
Everything.
This isn't a hit. This is
a perfect.
Pow.
Yeah, this is a pow. This is I like Meltzer's stuff, from the stuff he did on Green Arrow with Archer's Quest to Identity Crisis. He knows how to write solid superheroes. And him getting to play with the biggest group DC's got, I mean, you can't go wrong.
I see this being the book that replaces Infinite Crisis in the book that rushes me to the store to pick it up.
It's going to be going on with 52, so you got two to choose from.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's going to be the one that's, like, instead of just driving to the store to pick up books, it's going to be the one that's going to make me, like, salivate rushing to the store. And I'm going to want to page through it in the parking lot kind of book. Because that's what Infinite Crisis was. It was just...
Page through it in the parking lot. I'll read it in line at the store.
Yeah. It's just...
I'm not going to wait till I get outside.
There you go. But, I mean, that's the type of sensation that I got from Infinite Crisis. And I see this book doing that in... droves. So I'm thrilled to death
Ed
with this
Benes
book.
Keeps what he was doing with Birds of Prey up and not go for the cheesecake too often. You know?
Ooh, there's another one. That's definitely
Birds
a hit.
Birds of Prey,
huge hit.
But still, when Ed Benes was doing the art for Birds of Prey, I like how Gail Simone sort of toned... actually, I believe it was actually from Gail Simone's suggestion that he toned down the cheesecake because it really didn't work with the title. If he goes for cheesecake here... then it's really, really going to set it back for me. But I hope...
The preview art looks good.
It looks like good Ed Benes so far. Hopefully he'll keep it up.
I just want to see Zatanna.
Yeah, well, Zatanna, yeah, chances are he's going to draw her pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. But I will say, just touching real quickly on Bird Prey, adding Gypsy to the mix, never saw that coming. And Jade Canary or Shiva, it's interesting. I remember you guys Sean, I remember you and Jim talking about Birds of Prey and how much you wanted to see more of, you know, what this book is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with characters like Lady Blackhawk now, Zinda now being a major part and it being more of kind of a special ops team. It'll be interesting to see where she goes with this.
And I think she's been doing that, leading it to that, I should say, ever since she's been on the book. I don't think it's been, not as much as it is now, but I mean, I think it's been a slow progression towards that. And I think 1 year later led very nicely to a way to get them to that point that she, I think, all along has wanted. I have been pleased with that book since she's been on. From her first issue straight on through, she's really been delivering it. Great.
Issue 56.
Yeah. And it's been just a consistent series. I always liked the book, but she took it to a new level.
She made it a solid book about a group of female heroes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from her use of Black Canary, Power Girl, Huntress, every character she's brought into the mix. I mean, the Sensei and Student arc. She made Lady Shiva an interesting character
Rose
again.
Rose and Thorn.
For me.
I mean, when she brought Rose and Thorn into the book for that, I think it was about a two-issue arc, if I remember correctly. I loved the miniseries that she wrote, and I was so happy to see Rose and Thorn back in comics again, because the miniseries was great, yeah. And then when she included her in Birds of Prey, it was excellent. So, definitely.
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of talking to her at the last two Emerald City Comic Cons, and she is just such a wonderful person. She's such a great. It's interesting to see, you know, how she came from being an internet comedy writer, you know, through comic book resources to writing Deadpool and Agent X for Marvel, and then getting on Birds of Prey at DC, and now, you know, with her DC exclusive, she's writing what, four titles coming up for them, and she's really taken on a serious workload.
Does that include what she's doing with Gen 13? Was that part of what you're?
Actually, yeah, I think that's the fourth one. Her and Talent Caldwell doing that.
Yeah, I'm surprisingly interested in that, too.
I'll buy it.
I'll give it a couple issues, because I've never really been too into Gen 13, but again, because it's Gail Simone, I'll give it a shot.
I just want to know what's up with Captain Atom.
Oh, man.
He's back.
I want to know how.
He's back in Pog form, like Alf. No.
Pog But well, I think this is a good point to wrap up the show. I mean, we've been talking now for almost 2.5 hours about everything we could possibly think of here.
Yes, indeed, 2.5 hours yet again, man. You have pulled out the stops once.
So I guess, like I said, you know, this is a good point to wrap it up. Sean, thank you and Jim for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us. This is really a lot of fun. You guys are great to talk to.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do this another crossover episode at some point. Maybe a couple months down the road. Once we've got a little bit more 52, and we start to see some more of these 1 year later titles, you know, reaching their peak, we can kind of take a look back and see, you know, how much this has met our expectations.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually, to revisit it after the fact, too, and see, especially because we've got a lot of question marks, I think, right now, as far as whether or not how we feel about the series. So I definitely, anytime, just give us a shout, and we'll be here.
Maybe even the Men of 1,000 podcast will be in on at that time.
Hey, that'd be great.
Hell, David, I think he's ducking me. And I can say that because David's a friend, so.
Right. So you can, folks, you can listen to Sean and Jim every week. On Raging Bullets, which you can find it at ragingbullets.com. And you can also drop them an email at ragingbullets@gmail.com. Is that right, Sean?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
No problem. And for us, that's going to do it for this week. You can find us at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. We're also listed on iTunes. And Sean, you guys are listed on iTunes as well, right?
Absolutely.
And Podcast Alley?
You got it.
All right, so
over at comictiming@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or audio comments you want to send on in.
Yeah, we definitely would love to have some audio comments, and do our best to get those on and play those on the show. As always, your feedback is appreciated. And remember, if you go to iTunes, remember to give us a review. We love seeing those. Now that we know that feature's there, you can also do that for Raging Bullets. Let those guys know what you think of their show. That's all. And as always, remember, you know, there's always time for comics.
It's an elementary school insult. Yeah. It isn't a program.
It's a battle. It's a battle back and forth where they throw yo mama jokes at each other.
Oh, no.
It is hysterical.
That sounds like it's made for Adult Swim.
Wait a minute.
It's made for MTV.
A program out of this. We are doing the wrong thing. Why are we podcasting for free? There's all kinds of stupid crap we could do and be on television that night.
I probably heard one of the best ones The guy said, "Your mom is so big, when Japanese tourists hear, they point, scream, and run." That's my favorite, and I instantly had a picture of Godzilla in my mind as soon as I heard that joke.
My favorite one's always been, "Your mom is so fat, when God made the world, you had to move over."
Oh, jeez.